This is 24-hour-a-day radio featuring Bruce Barclay's talk show, Night Train at Midnight, KRNR, Roseburg, Oregon.
CBS News. There have been some new developments at the federal courthouse in Washington where those two armed convicts have been holed up since Thursday afternoon. I'm Stuart Novins reporting on the CBS Radio Network. We get that Washington story from Ed Bradley.
Gunshots and tear gas broke the long wait as the two prisoners attempted an escape through an air conditioning duct. Justice Department spokesman John Russell explained.
They used their axe to break into the air conditioning duct and then tried to exit around the basement, in the garage. There was an exchange of gunshots. They went back and dropped back in the cell blocks. And tear gas was shot, and they're back in the cell block. They're on the phone or talking through the door to various marshals and police officials.
Any police officers?
Nobody has been injured.
Both prisoners, Frank Gorham and Robert Jones, are now back in the cell block. Justice Department officials and the U.S. Marshals are talking to them once again and again, trying to convince them to give up their guns and surrender. Ed Bradley, CBS News at the U.S. District Courthouse, Washington.
More news in a minute.
May I help you, sir?
I'm the optimism of you. However, I heard there was a Four Dealers late show going on here.
Yes, sir.
And just what in heaven's name might that be?
Well, it's our end of the season clearance sale, and right now you can get terrific buys in our Quiet LTD and our mid-sized Torino.
Marvelous. And what about those little beauties over there? I hear they're very good on petrol.
Yes, sir. And if you're economy-minded, you'll like the low clearance prices on our basic Pinto, compact Maverick, and sporty Mustang, too.
Ah, but how about that smashing automobile? Could I get a lower price on that one?
Yes, even our magnificent Thunderbird is going at a low 74 clearance sale price.
You mean all these wonderful automobiles are selling at a low, low clearance price?
Yes, sir.
Ah, it is a far, far better time to buy than it ever was before.
Don't miss your Ford dealer's late clearance show. There are plenty of good seats left, and the price of admission may never be this low again.
The Soviet Union tonight put the blame for what it calls the fascist putsch in Cyprus on the Greek government. The official Soviet news agency TASS says the actions of Greece could cause serious international complications and upset the course toward détente. The agency report says the Soviet Union expects that the government of Greece will put an immediate end to what Moscow calls the open interference in the internal affairs of Cyprus. The pro-Greek military junta that upset the government of Archbishop Makarios today is in control of the Cyprus radio system. Its broadcasts say Makarios is dead. A man identified as Makarios has been broadcasting over a clandestine Cyprus station. There are reports that Makarios has found refuge in foreign enclaves in Cyprus, but there is no confirmation from first-hand observation to prove that Makarios is either dead or alive. National Airlines planes are grounded at least until tomorrow morning because of a strike. 1,600 machinists have walked off the job. The airline says the walkout costs the company $1 million in revenue each day. A state employees union is on strike in Ohio. It says about 40,000 state workers will honor the picket lines beginning at midnight Eastern Time, 2 hours from now. In Northern Ireland tonight, police say two Roman Catholic youths were found shot in the knees, the now traditional punishment meted out by the illegal Irish Republican Army to informers. Both had been abducted earlier at gunpoint from their homes. One shooting occurred in Belfast, the other in Londonderry. More after this.
Hart's Mountain announces the no-flea guarantee. We're so sure our flea-killing collar kills any flea on your dog or cat, we'll give you an unconditional money-back guarantee. If not satisfied, write Hart's, Harrison, New Jersey. The Hart's flea-killing collar. The collar with a no-flea guarantee.
Get the Hart's flea-killing collar immediately. We guarantee you'll never see an itchy flea.
I'm Ron Swoboda for CBS Radio. You can hear me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday now on Worldwide Sports. I alternate with colleague Pat Summerall, who's here every Tuesday and Thursday. On every broadcast, along with the latest scores, we try to bring you interviews with top figures in the world of sports and then give you a good idea of what's coming up. Join Pat and me, won't you, for complete national and international sports coverage on Worldwide Sports every Monday through Friday over the CBS Radio Network.
The House Judiciary Committee is holding a night session tonight that has been hearing sworn testimony from Charles Colson, former counsel to President Nixon, now a federal prisoner convicted of obstruction of justice in connection with the Pentagon Papers trial of Daniel Ellsberg. Colson is expected to be followed to the witness chair by the former personal attorney to President Nixon, Herbert Kalmbach. The FBI issued its first quarter report on serious crime in the nation today. The national average shows an increase of 15%. In small American cities and in rural areas, the increase in serious crimes was 29% over last year. Stuart Novins, CBS News.
I'm John Warner, administrator of the new Bicentennial Administration, established by the Congress of the United States. The Bicentennial is the 200th anniversary of the founding of our great nation. The Bicentennial honors the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. Those three great instruments that are the blueprint for the longest surviving democratic republic in the world. More than that, the Bicentennial is the laying of the cornerstone for the nation's third century. We Americans face a challenge as fresh, as daring, as that of the spirit of 1776. Unite in a common effort to improve the quality of life. I urge you join in the continuing American Revolution. Make sure your name is inscribed on that cornerstone as a participant.
I'm Fulton Lewis in the Mutual Broadcasting System studios in Washington, D.C. My commentary after this.
You stand alone and wait. He's 20 minutes late. He'll find a smile will go a long, long way.
More power to those smiles with Kodak's Pocket Smile Saver Kit. For less than $30, you get a little pocket camera, color film, magic cubes, extender, and lots more for less than $30. For a limited time only at your photo dealers.
A smile stays with our Smile Saver Kit. You'll see that smile will go a long, long way.
From Kodak.
According to Radio Cyprus broadcasts, the Greek-led Cypriot National Guard has forced President Archbishop Makarios out of power today and named a former pro-Greek resistance leader to replace him. Those broadcasts repeatedly claim that Makarios, a 61-year-old leader of the island's fight for independence and president since 1960, had been killed during the uprising. But the Turkish Cypriot radio, loyal to Makarios, said that he had found refuge with members of the United Nations peacekeeping force. In Tel Aviv, meanwhile, the Israeli state radio said that it actually heard a live broadcast by Makarios in which he declared, quote, "I am not dead, I am alive, and as long as I am alive, I am president, and the National Guard is to be considered traitors and rebels." The National Guard had announced in an official broadcast that newspaper publisher Nicholas Sampson, a 39-year-old opposition member of parliament, had been sworn in as the new president. Sampson later addressed the people and promised elections within a year, declaring unity and tranquility will now be restored among the Greek Cypriot people and the army. Heavy fighting between guardsmen and Makarios' supporters was reported raging early today in Nicosia, the capital of Cyprus. Tanks surrounded the presidential palace, and eyewitnesses quoted in a pooled news dispatch said that a part of that palace was on fire. Here in Washington, the Pentagon said that there is no change in the alert status of the Sixth Fleet in the Mediterranean because of this new crisis on Cyprus. That statement confirmed earlier reports from defense sources that no special alert or sailing orders had gone to the Sixth Fleet. Also here in Washington, members of the House Judiciary Committee on Capitol Hill said today that they heard testimony indicating that President Nixon agreed to a false cover story designed to explain an FBI investigation of CBS newsman Daniel Schorr. The testimony was given by former White House aide Charles Colson, one of the final witnesses in the committee's impeachment inquiry. Colson reportedly told the committee that President Nixon agreed to the release of a public statement saying that Shore was being considered for a government job after an FBI investigation of the CBS newsman finally surfaced. The committee members said that Colson described the statement as really a cover story to conceal the true purpose of the investigation, which he said was sparked by broadcasts considered by the White House to be anti-administration. Shore himself declined any comment on Colson's reported testimony, saying, "I'm too busy covering this administration's other wrongdoings to become a spokesman for myself." Colson was once one of the president's top political advisors. He faced a long day on the witness stand today. His White House activities cover four areas that the committee is very interested in: Watergate, the issue of domestic surveillance, political contributions by the dairy industry, and the settlement of an antitrust suit against International Telephone and Telegraph Company. In a morning session today, Colson described in detail the formation of the special White House investigating unit known as the Plumbers. He is serving a prison term for trying to defame Daniel Ellsberg, a chief target of the Plumbers, after Ellsberg leaked the Pentagon papers to the newspapers. In preparation for calling Colson as a witness, the Judiciary Committee staff conducted five long interviews with him. Committee members who read transcripts of those interviews said that they raised questions of Colson's credibility, but there was general agreement today that he was being very responsive in his answers to questions from members of the committee. Ohio Democrat Representative John Sieberling said, "Candid is not the word. He is not volunteering anything, but he is being factually accurate." Iowa Democrat Representative Edward Mesvinsky said that while Colson had not been asked whether President Nixon knew of the plan to break into Ellsberg's doctor's office, it was, in Mesvinsky's words, very clear the White House was directly involved. Colson was the next to last witness scheduled to testify before the committee. The celebrated Watergate case has now marked its second anniversary. 2 years have passed, 2 years plus a few weeks, during which time there has been conducted the most thorough, complete, and concentrated national examination of probably any issue in American history. After all this time and after all this unbelievable expenditure, there has really been not yet one shred of evidence to link the president with the planning of the Watergate break-in, the break-in itself, or the subsequent cover-up. Or, for that matter, no evidence whatsoever that Mr. Nixon really had any knowledge other than what he has stated time and time again before the American people. And yet this issue of Watergate continues. Its scope and costs continues to mount. Looking closely at the investigation, it has continued, as I said, for 2 years. It includes a combined staff of the House Judiciary Committee, the Irvin Committee in the Senate, the Special Prosecutor's Office, and other investigative arms with an array of legal talent nearing 175 attorneys. The Special Prosecutor has been investigating since last May. The House Judiciary Committee has been at it since last November. The Irvin Committee, of course, finally quit after 18 months. There have been three grand juries in operation in Washington alone. Seven congressional committees at least have made Watergate-related investigations. The Senate Watergate Committee had 53 days of hearings, 265 hours of testimony, 61 witnesses, over 2 million words spoken, over 10,000 pages of transcript, 118 hours of testimony by President and former White House aides. The House Judiciary Committee held 6 weeks of secret presentations by the committee staff, compiling a record of over 7,200 pages, after which they very generously gave the president's attorneys 2 days to provide the White House reply. They are now hearing witnesses, once again today behind closed doors, before beginning debate on articles of impeachment, which have probably already been drawn up. The General Accounting Office says that Watergate has cost the taxpayers of this country about $6.5 million, but that does not include the tens of thousands of man-hours that have been put in by over 50 field offices of the FBI, the Internal Revenue Service, the General Accounting Office, and other government agencies. The real cost of Watergate to the taxpayers is probably now closer to $15 million or more, and of course is climbing steadily. The American press has covered no story or expended no sum comparable in its history than the amount of time, money, and effort which has gone into exposing Watergate. and this does not take into account the misdirection and preoccupation of the Congress over an entire two-year period, and of course the Nixon administration itself, all at the expense of much-needed legislation, all at the expense of much-needed programs that would be of lasting benefit to all Americans. That really is the big price of Watergate. From the Mutual Studios in Washington, I'm Fulton Lewis, and that's the top of the news as it looks from here.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to a world we all inhabit too little. The world of imagination. Our own, yours and mine. Have you ever wondered what it's like to be a ghost? Well, one of this Earth's greatest writers did, Oscar Wilde. And having let his imagination play with the idea, he set down his findings in a ghost story that ranks with the world's finest, the classic tale of the Canterville Ghost. And if by chance you should think that a ghost's life is all wine and roses, why then listen to what went on one night at Canterville Castle.
Blood! I must have blood. And when I say blood, I do not mean a drop or two. I mean gallons. For am I not Gord Gibeon, the bloodsucker of Bexley Moor? Blood! Oh, give me blood!
Blood, my foot! What you need is some oil for those rusty chains.
Our mystery drama, The Canterville Ghost, was especially adapted from the Oscar Wilde classic for the Mystery Theater by George Lother and stars Arnold Moss. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
When you drink beer, do you tilt the glass for long, hearty swallows? Or just tip it and sip it? Well, sipping's the thing for wine. But Budweiser beer is a hearty drink, brewed for zest and character. The best way to enjoy Bud is to drink it. Not chug a lug, just man-sized beer drinker swallows. That's when that famous Budweiser taste, smoothness, and drinkability really come through. Smoothness and drinkability that come only from natural carbonation and exclusive beechwood aging. Smoothness and drinkability, too good for any half-hearted sipping. So drink up. You'll see that brewing beer right does make a difference. And that when you say Budweiser, you've said it all. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Hey, ma'am, what's for dinner? Hey, ma'am, what you got?
What's for dinner? Your ShopRite supermarket suggests choice beef first-cut chuck steaks just 59 cents a pound this week. Save two on smoked ham, shank portion 69 a pound, butt portion 79 a pound. For a quick meal, try Swanson's Frozen Hungry Man dinners, just 99 cents each. For dessert, ShopRite's produce department is featuring fresh honeydew melons, 79 cents each. They're great topped with ice cream. There's a lot more for a little less at your ShopRite, so stop in soon.
She loves a family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, ma, what's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer.
There is no mystery about the morning when you come rambling with gambling. Good evening, evening mystery fans. This is John Gambling, and every morning, Monday through Saturday, here at WOR from 5 a.m. till 10, we get the crew together to try to put the morning together for you, to tell you what the weather's going to be like, whether there's heavy traffic coming into the city, whether the subways and the commuter trains are running. Bob Harris is in WOR's Weather Center every morning with all that very complicated equipment that he has to help prognosticate the day's weather. We cover sports completely with Don Crickey. In the news department, Peter Roberts, Henry Gladstone, and Harry Hennessy. And up in the helicopter, George Meade or Fred Feldman keeping an eye on the traffic scene. So altogether, we do try to take any mystery out of the morning. And just to brighten up the beginning of your day a little bit, I think we have some kind of nice, listenable, and tuneful music. So tune in tomorrow morning or any morning for Rambling with Gambling. Now, back to the mystery.
Our story takes place in Canterville Castle, ancestral home of the de Canterville family since the 15th century. You immediately assume, I have no doubt, that the castle is in England. Well, it isn't. It was, but it isn't anymore. For you see, that well-known multimillionaire Hiram Otis had it dismantled stone by stone, transported to the United States, and re-erected stone by stone on his own estate in the Midwest. So it is that one fine afternoon, we find him, Hiram, and his wife Martha, and his lovely daughter Virginia, and Jeffrey de Canterville, her fiancé, in the newly restored library of the newly erected castle of the Cantervilles.
Well, Mr. Otis, I hope you're satisfied with the job I've done. Canterville Castle re-erected, lock, stock, and barrel, even to the ancestral gardens which surround it.
Well, the castle's okay, but I don't know about the gardens. The guy I hired to be the general manager when we opened the place as a tourist resort says the pool ought to be where you put the pine woods.
But, Daddy, that's the exact area where the pine woods were. In England.
Well, Ginny, dear, tourists won't know that.
But that was part of the deal when Daddy bought the castle from Jeff and hired him to re-erect it here, that nothing would be changed.
Well, business is business. If it'll be more convenient for tourists to have the pool where the pine woods are. Now, what's this?
Well, you know what that is, Mr. Otis. It's the bloodstain. That's the spot in front of the fireplace where Sir Simon de Canterville stabbed his wife to death way back in 1601.
I told you I wanted it removed.
And I told you it can't be removed.
You got any Otis bathroom cleanser around, Jeff?
Yes. Yes, of course, in the cleaning closets. You told me to stock it.
Get a can of it.
But, Mr. Otis, really...
bathroom cleanser is guaranteed to get rid of any stain. And it'll get rid of this one. Go on, give me a can of it.
Good heavens, that vase. Oh, dear, it fell off the mantelpiece.
No, it didn't fall off, Mrs. Otis. It was knocked off, I'd say, by Sir Simon de Canterville.
The ghost?
Yes, I'm afraid he doesn't like the idea of removing that bloodstain. However, I'll get the cleanser.
Him and his ghost. Well, do you think I was born yesterday?
Jeff wouldn't lie to you, Daddy. And if he says the castle's haunted,
then... Now, look, Ginny... Just because this fortune hunter fiancé of yours, Lord Jeffrey Canterville, believes in ghosts, doesn't mean I have to.
Daddy, if you call Jeff a fortune hunter once more, just once more...
Okay, honey. I'm sorry. All I want is your happiness, sweetie. And if he'll make you happy, fine.
Here we are, Mr. Otis, a fresh can of Otis bathroom cleanser.
All right, let me have it. Now watch. I spray it on the bloodstain. You bring a cloth to wipe it off with?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Oh, never mind. Use my handkerchief. Now, one wipe, so. Where's your bloodstain now?
Oh, Hiram, it's gone.
What else? An Otis guarantee is an Otis guarantee.
It will come back.
Not after an Otis cleanser treatment, it won't.
What was that? Oh, what is it?
It's the ghost again, Mrs. Otis.
No, it was the wind or something.
But there isn't any wind.
Well, then it was something else, but not a ghost. I just plain don't believe in ghosts, and that's the end of that.
Well, if you ask me, Mr. Otis, it's only the beginning.
Eleanor! Oh, blast the woman, where is she?
Here, Simon, dear. Here I am.
Get the paint bucket. We have to repaint the stain.
Again?
I promise you, however often Mr. Hiram Otis erases my bloodstain...
My bloodstain, dear.
Oh, all right, yours. But you wouldn't have had it if it hadn't been for me. You
Do forgive me.
Oh, my dear, I have forgiven you at least once every 100 years since it happened. I should not be here otherwise.
And the least I can do is to see that your stay here remains peaceful by giving that barbarous American his comeuppance. Fear not, my dearest love. It is Sir Simon de Canterville, me, against Mr. Hiram Otis, him. And I truly believe there's little doubt as to the outcome of the battle.
A blue bloodstain? What do you mean a blue bloodstain?
Just what I say, Mr. Otis.
The stain's reappeared, and this time it's blue, Daddy.
Now, look, I don't know what you two are up to.
Up to?
For your information, the boss painter who's redecorating the upstairs bedrooms complained that somebody's stealing his paints.
And you think that we, that Jeff and I would...
Who else?
But why would you think that?
Because the way I see it...
Yes? How do you see it?
Well, I don't know how I see it. All I know is it doesn't make sense. And we better start making some sense around here because we open in a week. Now get rid of that stain. Once and for all, get rid of it.
Do you realize that I have repainted that bloodstain by the fireplace 4 separate times, and each time that meddling American has had it removed?
I should think you'd want to forget it. After all, it's a reminder of why you are doomed to haunt Canterville Castle. Oh, dear, and I with you.
But you are not. You can leave any time you wish, Eleanor.
Oh, Simon, not without you.
Oh, my dear, was ever man so loved by woman as I by you?
Or I by you.
And yet, I killed you.
Because you loved me.
Well, however you put it, I condemned us both to eternal misery. Well, it shall be misery in peace. For nearly 400 years I've haunted Canterville Castle without hindrance. Yet what that vile upstart has put us through in the past 3 years, tearing down the castle around our heads, building it up again around our heads, and the noise. And now he means to turn it, my castle, into what they call a tourist attraction. Never!
My dearest, what can you do?
That beastly American must be driven out. And his family with him. I know. Let me see what I have in the way of grisly costumes. Ah, yes, yes, yes. I think this should do the trick quite neatly.
Which is it?
Gaunt Gibeon, the bloodsucker of Bexley Moor.
Oh, that's smashing.
Jeff? I won't let you get married till you get a job.
But, Daddy, Jeff doesn't need a job. He has all the money you paid him for Canterville Castle.
Have you? Have you, Jeff?
You know I haven't, Mr. Otis.
But obviously Ginny doesn't. You didn't tell her.
Tell her what, Otis?
Yes, what?
Well, tell her.
Ginny, I'm afraid that just about every cent your father paid for Canterville went to pay off back taxes, liens, mortgages, interest payments, and the Lord only knows what.
Oh, Jeff.
Well, don't you see, that's why I sold Canterville in the first place. I had to. I couldn't keep it up anymore. I had no choice. It was sell or lose everything.
So you see, he's broke. Flat busted.
Now, just a moment. I have the promise of a job, Mr. Otis, a top-flight architectural firm in New York.
The promise of a job? Now, look, Jeff, there'll be no marriage until... What's that?
I don't know.
I'm afraid I do. It's the Canterville ghost.
The ghost?
Come on, Jeff. Come on now. Aren't these tricks of yours getting just a little childish?
Now, Mr. Otis, believe me, this is no act. It's the real thing. Whenever the ghost moans like this, it means he's going to put in an appearance. And I've seen some of those appearances. Now, Mrs. Otis, Ginny, you'd better come with me.
Oh, where to?
Well, anywhere but here. I'm not afraid of the ghost myself. He's never done me any harm, but his appearance can be positively ghastly. And you'd better not see it, either of you.
No, I'm staying here.
What? What?
I've been hoping to see him, Jeff.
Hoping to see the ghost?
Yes, Mother.
Oh, dear.
Somehow, I have a feeling I won't be afraid of him. Don't ask me why. I can't explain the feeling. I just know I won't be.
Of course you won't. Jeff lets you in on his little gag. But I suppose I'm to be scared to death, huh?
Oh, but Daddy, there is a ghost. You've got to believe it.
Oh.
Look! Oh, my heaven!
Blood! I must have blood!
He's got to be kidding.
When I say blood, I do not mean a drop or two. I mean gallons. For am I not Gaunt Gibeon, the bloodsucker of Bexley Moor? Blood!
Blood, my foot. What you need is some oil for those rusty chains. And I just happen to have a can of Otis all-purpose here in this desk drawer.
Cringe, thou knave! Grovel in abject fear before me.
Ah, here's a can of Otis oil.
Oh,
knock off the screaming. You got nothing to scream about, because believe me, this oil will do the trick for those chains of yours.
Leave off! I'm ruining my chain.
Daddy, stop it. Leave him alone.
And another squirt right here.
Oh, Daddy, stop it. Give me that can.
Here now.
Leave him alone. Can't you see how unhappy he is?
Oh, now, look, Jenny. Any guy tries to pull a gag on me.
This is no gag, no trick. This is misery. Oh, look at his face. Look into his eyes. He's in agony. I've never felt so sorry for anyone in my life.
You feel sorry for me?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
No one has felt sorry for me in over 370 years.
I do.
Well, you frighten me. Oh, no, you can't be. You couldn't be. No, no. Not the Golden Girl.
Oh, come on, you two. Stop it. Nice little act, but just a little creaky in spots.
You clod! You lout! You poltroon! Is it thus you'd taunt a noble lord of Canterville? Hear me, then. I sought but to warn you hence by harrowing up your soul. But there's another way to be rid of you. Death.
No,
No, please, no, please, I beg you, don't kill him. Don't.
For thine own sake, then, child, be warned and get thee hence. I am Simon of Canterville, and easy wrought into murderous rage. So be gone. Be gone, be gone.
Do you believe now that he's a real ghost?
I sure do.
Well, I guess we better do what he wants us to do, Otis. Let's leave the castle.
Oh, no.
Are you saying that you won't do
it? You bet I am. I paid a fortune for this joint. I'd rather die than see that money go down the drain. Oh, no. I'll tear this damn castle down again, stone by stone, before he gets the satisfaction of seeing me run. You hear that, Buster? Stone by stone.
It certainly appears that for once, for the first time in nearly 400 years, the ghost of Sir Simon de Canterville has met his match. What happens, you may ask, when ancient English ghost meets eyeball to eyeball with modern American business tycoon? We'll learn more when I return shortly with Act Two.
Pardon me, miss.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell me what happens this time of year?
Rhubarb reaches its peak.
Nope.
Muskmelon reaches its peak.
No.
Oh, well, does it in any way involve something reaching its peak?
No, not really.
Oh.
What happens this time of year is that you can get a really outstanding deal on Buick's small but surprisingly elegant Apollo. And with what's happening to prices, you may never have a better chance to buy a Buick, huh?
Hey, I know what happens.
Yeah?
The buzzards come back to Hinckley Ridge, Ohio.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't thought of that. Oh.
At Suburban Savings in northern New Jersey, you're always the tops. So to help you reach the top, Suburban is offering you a top 7.90% effective annual yield on their 7.50% savings certificates. And Suburban guarantees it from 4 to 10 years. Just a $2,500 minimum is all you need to get your savings straight to the top. Federal regulations allow premature withdrawals on savings certificates, provided prescribed federal penalties are adhered to. Of course, Suburban also has other ways to top off your day with a wide selection of other savings plans to choose from. Your savings will always come out on top because we offer you the highest interest rates allowed by law. Come into any Suburban Savings office conveniently located in Bayonne, Edgewater, Elmwood Park, Emerson, Hackettstown, Morris Plains, Nutley, Paramus, Sparta, and Wayne, and choose the right savings plan for you.
And now, with another story of mystery and intrigue, here is Commander Neville Putney to keep you in anxiety. What's this story about, Commander?
Well, it concerns a middle-aged business executive named Fremont Witherton, who, after spending his entire career with the same firm, returned home one evening with his dreams suddenly shattered.
Is that you, Fremont?
It's me, Erica.
Fremont, you look so peaked.
Erica, I've been fired. That new plant manager, he's been trying to cut me out, and today he succeeded.
Well, you don't need to give me that hangdog look. Just go out and get another job.
I'm through, Erica. I'm 58 years old. Nobody will hire me for half the salary I've been making. My only hope is to kill the plant manager.
Fremont, I hate rough stuff, but if you've decided, your Ross goes upstairs in the trunk. You load it, and I'll warm up the getaway car.
Hey, young man, how about that for a story?
Well, that was a dilly, Commander, but you just can't leave us this way. How did it all come out?
Time's up for now, but tune in Bob and Ray on WOR 315 to 7, and maybe you'll find out.
Now, really, you know, Sir Simon de Canterville, or rather, I should say, the ghost of Sir Simon de Canterville, can't be blamed for threatening to kill Hiram Otis. After all, it is his castle, or it was. And, well, how would you feel if you'd lived somewhere for nearly 400 years, only to have someone you'd never seen before threaten to tear the place down, stone by stone? Now, you really can't blame him for being in a towering rage.
Eleanor! I shall rend him limb from limb.
Oh, Simon, perhaps we ought to leave the Americans in peace.
Oh, no.
Darling, please.
I say no.
No, Simon, please. Don't make me speak severely to you.
Severely?
Well, truthfully, it's quite possible you've lost your ability to frighten people.
Lost my ability to frighten people?
Yes, dear. You are but a ghost of your former self.
Just what do you mean?
Well, I very much fear that you're growing stale. And in the parlance of the day, why, you simply can't hack it anymore.
Hack it? Not able to hack it? Me?
Oh, Simon, come now. Were you not reduced to using brute force? You, who through all these centuries have prided yourself on the artistry of your hideous disguises. Why, you failed to frighten a mere mortal. And Simon, an American at that.
Well, he's a clod. Altogether too stupid to have even a semblance of nerves.
Is that thunder?
I think so. It just occurs to me, I've always been at my best during a thunderstorm.
True enough.
And tonight, to judge from that sky out there, will be a night of elemental fury. Oh. A perfect background for haunting. I shall outdo myself this night. I shall employ a disguise so horrible, so fiendish. Something guaranteed to drive the churl out of his skull.
What?
Ah, yes. That is the question. What shall it be?
Oh, I have every confidence that you, my sweet, will create a costume that every ghost in England, in the world, would give his winding sheet to possess.
Oh, you are too kind, altogether too kind. But let me think.
Oh, you have it?
Yes. You, my darling, have given me a thought. Winding sheets. That
is the ticket.
A winding sheet?
Of course. I have an excellent one. Very old, very moldy. The one with the frilled cuffs and neck.
But of course, do go on.
I will wear that and take with me my rusty dagger. I shall approach the room moaning and groaning in a most gruesome fashion. When I enter it, I shall stand over them in the form of a green, icy, cold corpse till they're all but paralyzed with fear. And then I shall cast off the winding sheet and crawl around the room with white, bleached bones and one rolling eyeball.
Oh, Simon, dear, you have outdone yourself.
I dare say even you will agree I can still cut the mustard, my dear.
Oh, you can, you have. What's the girl? The American's daughter?
Oh, she must go in peace. I touch her not.
Why so?
Because... Well, my dear, you will scarcely believe this, but not only did I fail to frighten her, but she said... Well, she said she felt sorry for me.
She said that?
Yes, yes. And she looked at me when she said it with eyes... Well, Eleanor, her eyes were filled with sympathy and pity and... Yes, love.
Oh, Simon... Could she be the golden girl?
I should like to think so, but I fear not, my love. It's too much to ask. Much too much. But I must to work. The night approaches and the storm. I promise you, oh, I promise you, that within a few short hours I shall reduce the cold-blooded Hiram Otis... to a mindless mess.
Why have you brought me here, Jeff? I've never seen this part of the castle before.
It's a hidden passage, or it once was. As to why I brought you here, well, it seems to me every time I want to be alone with you, your father shows up, or your mother, and... Oh, Ginny, I do want to talk to you.
Yes?
Ginny, marry me.
But, Jeff, dear, I'm going to. You know that?
No, I mean now. Tonight.
Tonight?
Yes, let's get in my car, drive to town, find a justice of the peace, and get married.
But, darling, we don't have a license.
Oh, we'll get one.
How?
I don't know, but we will. I'll manage it somehow.
Jeff, this is the United States, not England. Things are done differently here. And anyway, there's no sense discussing it, because... I just... can't go against my father's wishes.
Oh, you don't have to be afraid of him.
Afraid? Darling, I'm not afraid of him. I love him. I know what you think. That he's hard and domineering and ruthless and a lot of other things. But you know, inside, he's not that way at all.
Perhaps not. Unfortunately, I only know him from the outside.
But as time goes by, you'll learn to know him better. And you'll see...
Ginny, you're not a child. You're a woman. I need you, Ginny. I want you.
Jeff, please. Please, darling. Jeff, no.
Ginny, oh, please.
Jeff. Oh, Jeff.
Blood! I must have blood!
Oh, no. Not tonight. Not now.
And when I say blood, I don't mean a drop or two of blood. I mean gallons of blood.
It's him. It's the ghost.
Who else?
Oh, to drive that churl Hiram Otis out of his mind. Oh, 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 misery. Oh, agony. Oh.
He went right by us. He never saw us.
Yes, I know. Now let's follow him and see what he's up to.
Oh, horror. Hideous horror. Hark ye to the horrifying moans of the vampire monk. Oh.
My parents' bedroom. He's gone in there.
Heed to the horrifying moans of the vampire monk or the bloodless Benedictine.
Who's there?
The vampire monk. See, I bend over you, a green, icy corpse. Watch as I crawl around the room with white bleached bones and one rolling eyeball.
Oh. What are you doing on the floor?
Huh?
Oh, why, you're the ghost, aren't you? Well, please now, could you be just a bit more quiet? My husband has had a very tiring day and he needs a sleep. And you're certainly going to wake him up sooner or later with all that moaning and groaning.
Well, I am a ghost. I'm haunting you.
All right. But please do it quietly.
Deride and ridicule me, would you?
Oh, but please, you misunderstand.
Pay for it. Aye, woman, pay with thy heart's blood. You've seen your daughter for the last time on this earth. For the last time.
Jeff, he means me.
No, darling, he can't if he didn't see us following him.
I have seen you. Huh? I saw you there in the secret passage, but was too busy with other matters to be bothered with you. I saw you following me. From the back of my head, I saw you. Stand aside, Geoffrey de Canterville. I take your beloved with me into the next world.
Oh, no, you don't.
I warn you. You're a Canterville, and I would do you no harm, but stand in my way, and I will place on you, as I already have on them, the Canterville curse.
No. Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Stand aside, I say. Stand aside.
Wait.
Yes?
If you wish to take me into the next world, all right, go ahead. But leave Geoffrey alone. Leave my parents alone. Don't harm them.
You would give your life for them?
If I must.
Ginny, no.
Ginny! Oh, Ginny! Geoffrey! She's gone, vanished!
Yes.
What does it mean? Oh, good Lord, what does it mean?
What does what mean? What's going on
here? Oh, Hiram, that ghost, he's taken Ginny. He's taken her with him into the next world.
Oh, come on now.
It's the truth. In heaven's name, Mr. Otis, wake up to the truth. The ghost of Simon de Canterville has taken Ginny out of this world and into his own. And you'll never see her again. And I'll never see her again.
What the devil are you talking about?
It's the curse of the Cantervilles. The ghost placed the curse on you tonight. Oh, what lies ahead for you, Mr. Otis?
Yeah? What does lie ahead for me?
I can't even begin to tell you. And even if I could, I wouldn't dare.
Strange sort of ghost, Sir Simon de Canterville. At one moment, he's almost gentle, tender, and the next, in a towering rage. He acts almost like us humans, doesn't he? And like us humans, he may have jumped from the frying pan into the fire in abducting Virginia Otis. We'll find out shortly when I return with Act Three.
Most appetizers you eat, but there's one appetizer you drink, Dubonnet.
Before that's the time to think about some Dubonnet to drink. Before a meal by day or night, it helps to whet your appetite. Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
Think of Dubonnet as an appetizer. It's the wine you drink before meals, before lunch, before dinner at cocktail time, before whatever you've got cooking. It helps to whet your appetite. Whether you serve it straight, on the rocks, with a twist, or soda, Dubonnet before makes what comes after that much better. Dubonnet. It all started in France, of course.
Before, yeah, before. The time before for Dubonnet.
Product of USA. Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
Well, good evening, Mystery Theater fans. This is Gene Shepherd, and we're sitting here having a very friendly roundtable discussion with many of our listeners who gather nightly here at the 710 spot on the dial. And if you'd like to join our little evening gatherings, I'm on every night at, it's 9:15 now. 9:15. You write that down and make sure that you bring all the things you need to be prepared for a fantastic evening. I'm on every night. From 9:15 until 10. Join our little group some night. We sit around and discuss the world and enjoy life and and walk around in the weeds and just be people. 9:15 on WOR.
There is no mystery about the morning when you come rambling with gambling. Good evening, evening mystery fans. This is John Gambling, and every morning, Monday through Saturday, here at WOR from 5 a.m. till 10, we get the crew together to try to put the morning together for you, to tell you what the weather's going to be like, whether there's heavy traffic coming into the city, whether the subways and the commuter trains are running. Bob Harris is in WOR's Weather Center every morning with all that very complicated equipment that he has to help prognosticate the day's weather. We cover sports completely with Don Crickey. In the news department, Peter Roberts, Henry Gladstone and Harry Hennessy. And up in the helicopter, George Meade or Fred Feldman keeping an eye on the traffic scene. So all together, we do try to take any mystery out of the morning. And just to brighten up the beginning of your day a little bit, I think we have some kind of nice, listenable, and tuneful music. So tune in tomorrow morning or any morning for Rambling with Gambling. Now, back to the mystery.
I take you now down a short flight of wide stone steps, somewhere in the nether regions of Canterville Castle. Steps stained by centuries of dampness. It is a place where rats and beetles might scuttle about, in and among the bleached bones of a skeleton which lies on the stone floor. Poor skeleton. One of its hands, manacled, claws towards the remains of a bowl which once held food. A door opens. A light appears on the steps. And Sir Simon de Canterville sweeps down the steps, dragging Virginia Otis after him. He flings her to the floor.
Here lie my bones. Here soon shall lie yours.
He whips a dagger from a case at his side, stoops, grabs her by the hair, and holding her head back, makes as if to plunge the blade into her throat. But he stops short.
How can you look at me like that? Are you not afraid?
No.
You face death, yet you're not afraid.
Do I face death? Will you kill me?
What is to prevent me?
You killed once out of passion and have suffered nearly four centuries for it. Would you dare again?
I would.
Well, then, if I'm to die, I suppose I shall. Being afraid wouldn't help matters. But really, I'm not afraid. At least, not of you.
Eleanor was right.
Eleanor?
My wife. She says I don't seem to frighten anyone anymore, that I can't hack it anymore.
Why do you want to?
I'm a ghost. It's my only reason for existing.
It's not a very good reason, if you ask me.
It's no reason at all, if it comes to that. It's simply part of the punishment I must bear for murdering my wife.
The Lady Eleanor?
Yes.
Why did you murder her?
Jealousy. Unreasoning jealousy. I thought her in love with another man. I found out later how wrong I'd been. But it was too late then. I assure you, my remorse was so great I hardly struggled at all when her brothers chained me in this dungeon and starved me to death.
And that? That's your skeleton?
Yes.
Poor skeleton. Poor ghost. You must be very tired.
As only a man who has not slept for nearly 400 years can be. But there'll be no rest for me, never any rest, until the legend of Canterville Castle is fulfilled.
But I didn't know there was a legend. Jeff never told me.
Oh, yes, yes. And when it is fulfilled, then, why, then I shall sleep at last in a little garden far beyond the pine woods.
What garden do you mean?
A garden where the grass grows long and deep, where the hemlock flowers are like great white stars and the nightingale sings all night long. All night long he sings. And the cold, crystal moon looks down and the yew tree spreads its giant arms over the sleepers.
The sleepers? Do you mean the garden of death?
Yes, death. Would you help me if you could? If you could make the legend come true, would you?
Yes. What is the legend?
It is this. When a golden girl can win prayer from beyond the gates of sin, when the barren almond bears and the girl gives away her tears, then shall all the house be still and peace come to Canterville.
What does it mean?
It means that you must weep with me for my sins because I have no tears, and pray with me for my soul because I have no faith. And then, if you have always been sweet and good and gentle, that withered almond tree you have perhaps seen outside the library window.
The barren almond tree, yes.
That tree will bloom again to show...
Yes, to show...
that the angel of death has had mercy on me.
I should like to do that for you.
I know. But you may fail.
Yes.
And if you fail, the tortures of the damned will be yours through all eternity. You must dare to go beyond the gates of sin. You will see fearful shapes, hear wicked voices. If you are the golden girl of the legend, you will not be harmed. But if you're not the golden... I tremble for you. Well, what is your answer?
I will do it.
Think. Be sure. Oh, do be sure.
I am sure.
Then turn, and behold the gates of sin. Ah, you shrink back. You are afraid.
The shrieks. The laughter.
Worse lies beyond the gates. Far worse.
Oh.
Ah, you are afraid. You are afraid. And I am doomed.
No.
You will go for me. You will go beyond the gates of sin.
For you. For any other soul.
And give me your hand. Let me kiss it.
Your fingers cold as ice. Oh, but your lips burn like fire.
Soon perhaps my lips too shall be cold. If you are the golden girl, I pray God you are, for your sake more than mine.
You must release my hand now, if I'm to go beyond the gate.
Yes, I know. Only...
Let go. Let go.
Go! No! Virginia! Come back! Come back!
Mr. Otis, there's nothing that can be done. Virginia's gone. Forever.
Hiram, it's all your fault. If we hadn't ridiculed the ghost, if we had just taken him seriously, all this would have been avoided.
I got to admit you're right, Martha. But that doesn't help matters. All I want now is to get Ginny back. Safe and sound.
The girl. Where is she?
She's gone. Gone. I've been a fool. I thought she might be the golden girl, the girl of the legend, and I let her go beyond the gates of sin.
Oh, no. If that be so, I am done with you, Simon.
Oh, no, not you. Oh,
don't touch me.
Don't touch me. You're revolting enough to be human.
I tried to stop her at the last moment. I tried. But it was too late. Too late. Too late.
Simon.
The nightingale. Eleanor. The nightingale.
Oh.
It sings. It sings in the garden of death. It sings.
Oh. And the girl, Virginia. Oh, she succeeded. She must have... Simon, Simon, look!
Virginia.
Sir Simon.
You've returned. From beyond the gates of sin, you've returned.
Did you think I wouldn't?
Well, yes, yes, I thought that.
I knew I would. I'd not have gone past those gates if I hadn't felt sure.
Then you are the golden girl of the legend. You are the golden girl.
Are you saved now?
Oh, yes, child, yes. I'm saved. After all these centuries, released. And you're the one who did it. Eleanor, she is the one. What can I do to thank her? What?
What? Oh, Simon, restore her to her own world. What else, dear?
My watch has stopped. What time is it?
It's nearly 3 a.m.
3 a.m? I've got a 9 o'clock committee breakfast. Oh, what am I saying? Business, business. It becomes a habit. My little girl is gone, but my first thought is if... Oh, God in your heaven, what kind of a man am I?
Oh, Hiram, you're a good man. You just lost yourself in making a living.
Yes. Lost myself in making a living. Yeah. We spend too much of our lives making a living. We should spend more of it living. I guess your ghost knows that, Jeff.
I don't know whether he does or not.
I do. What was that? I thought I heard... Why, it sounded like Ginny's voice.
Yes, I thought I heard it too.
You did, Jeff. I'm back. I'm here.
Ginny!
Oh, my God,
Ginny.
Oh, it's Ginny. Oh, my baby.
Ginny,
my
baby. Where have you been? What happened to you?
No, no,
please,
don't ask
Daddy.
Me. Don't ask me that ever
yes,
again.
Yes, but Ginny.
Daddy, you... I love you, but don't, please don't, not ever, try to tell me what to do with my life, my soul, again. Let me do what I want to do, what God put me into the world to do.
You sound... strange.
No, no, not strange. Truthful. I've seen what lies beyond. Beyond this world, beyond us. And we here on this earth, we think that we're the end of everything. And we're really only the beginning. Daddy. Dad. And Mom. And you too, Jeff. There's so much out there that we don't understand. So much.
Ginny, what did you see?
What's that? Not a bird at this hour of the morning.
It's a nightingale, Mother. And come. Come to the window. I'm sure we'll see what I expect to see.
Yes. There. Look.
At what, Ginny? At what?
The storm is over now. And the moon, a great white moon, sheds its light over the gardens. Look. The almond tree. The barren almond tree.
Why, it's blossomed. I can see the flowers in the moonlight. And that tree... it's part of the legend. For centuries it hasn't bloomed, and legend said it never would until peace came to Canterville.
And peace has come.
far away, beyond the pine wood, there is a little garden. There the grass grows long and deep. There the hemlock flowers are like great white stars. And the nightingale sings all night long. All night long he sings. And the cold, crystal moon looks down. And the yew tree spreads its giant arms over the sleepers.
Jeffrey?
Yes, Ginny?
He's at peace, Jeffrey. The Canterville ghost is finally at peace.
This story, this beautiful story, we owe to a man named Oscar Wilde. Perhaps some of you know the tragic details of the last years of his life. Well, no matter. What's important is what he wrote. Almost 100 years ago, wrote what entertained you in this past hour, and perhaps enlightened you, too. It is better to live than to make a living. I'll be back shortly.
Say, do you know what happens this time of year?
The swallows come back to Capistrano.
Nope.
The buzzards come back to Hinckley Ridge, Ohio?
No.
Bulldogs all over the world begin to shed?
Not even close. Oh. This, my friend, is the time of year when you can get a super little deal on the practical but elegant Buick Apollo. And just between you and me, it may very well be the best chance you'll ever have to buy a Buick.
I could have sworn this was Buzzard Day in Hinckley.
Oscar Wilde is buried in Père Lachaise Cemetery, just outside Paris. I visited his tomb, a tomb over which a sad angel with drooping wings weeps. And yes, I bowed my head, not so much in homage to the man as to the spirit within him, the spirit within all of us, our own private, very private Canterville ghost. Our cast included Arnold Moss, Marion Seldes, Mildred Clinton, William Redfield, and Robert Dryden. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
WR Mystery Theater has been brought to you by ShopRite Supermarkets, where you get a lot more for a little less, and by Suburban Savings, with offices throughout North Jersey. The preceding Mystery Theater program is furnished by the CBS Radio Network. There is a vacancy on Community School Board Number 10 in the Bronx. If you live in District 10 or have a child who attends District 10 school, and you're interested in serving on the school board, call 884-0808 for more information. This is WOR New York, an RKO general station at the WOR time signal, exactly 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time.